This is the podcast for the Evangelical Chapter of the Foundation for Religious Diplomacy. I'm John Moorhead, the chapter custodian, and my guest today is Os Guinness. He's the author of a number of books, and today we're going to be discussing his book from 2013, The Global Public Square, Religious Freedom and the Making of a World Safe for Diversity, through InterVarsity Press. And for me, this book is really summarized by a quotation from page 13, where Os writes this: "How do we live with our deepest differences, especially when those differences are religious and ideological, and very especially when those differences concern matters of our common public life? In short, how do we create a global public square and make the world safer for diversity?" Os, it's our privilege to have you to the program today. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, in your book, you argue that we must work toward soul freedom, a variation of Roger Williams' term, soul liberty. What do you mean by this term, and how does it apply to making the world safer for diversity and religious freedom?
Well, soul freedom I use as his rather fresh way of describing freedom of conscience or religious freedom. And I think today it's under a cloud in many circles, and so we need to recapture why it's so important, why it's the first of the political liberties, deeper even than freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, and why it's such a key to civil society and thriving free societies, and why it's essential to working out social harmony for nations. And obviously we can see with the dramatic events happening in the Middle East with the Islamic State, that issue of living with our deep differences is one of the world's great issues today.
Now, obviously, religious freedom and engaging each other in politics and religion and civility is an important issue. But in the book, you also make another point. You state that, quote, "how we live with our deepest differences lies behind so many of the other issues and the way they will be handled," close quote. What types of issues do you see religious freedom and civility connected to that we might not normally think of?
Well, clearly in the global era, many of the issues which have been internal to different nations are now being worked out publicly for the whole globe. Economic issues, environmental issues, soon biogenetic issues and things like this. And obviously they will assume different ethical positions, different worldview positions, and so on. So this clash between differences that are very profound is going to be one for the entire world. So we'll need global public squares where people really understand how they debate with people with whom they differ very, very profoundly, but they've got to do so persuasively and civilly without blowing people off the map, like you see the Islamic State are trying to do now. And the sad thing is that here in America, which used to have what James Madison called the true remedy, after 50 years of culture warring, even the United States is squandering its great heritage and not showing any profound difference from many of the bad ways that people are handling it elsewhere in the world. Now, other countries, such as my own England, don't have such a great record of handling these things, although many of the earliest ideas, you mentioned Roger Williams, many of the earliest ideas were actually English, but they flourished over here in America rather than in England.
Now, you mentioned Roger Williams both in your book and just a moment ago in your comments. I was struck in reading your book by Roger Williams. Why, in a sense, is he a neglected founding father whose work in religious freedom should be considered by evangelicals?
Well, in his time, he was considered a nutcase. In other words, giving religious freedom for everybody, yes, he said. And you look at some of the other heroes of the 17th century, like John Locke and John Milton, you know, they qualified it. They wouldn't give it, say, to atheists or to Catholics. But Williams was consistent, no. If religious freedom is a human right, it is for everybody. And, of course, he founded Rhode Island, which many people thought was a sort of state for nutcases. But his ideas, of course, have been gloriously vindicated, although the same reservations and suspicions you had then, you still see today. I mean, I was with a pastor, an evangelical pastor, about a month ago, and he was saying, I don't believe in freedom of conscience for everybody. Think what Muslim extremists would do if we gave them freedom of conscience. Well, he didn't understand the American tradition of the things that go along with freedom of conscience, such as civility, the need to persuade people, and so on and so on and so on. And so he was just prejudiced against freedom of conscience. When I was involved in the Williamsburg Charter back in the 80s, I received death threats for 6 months from Christian survivalists. They were beyond the Christian right. They were Christian survivalists who thought it was dangerous to give religious freedom to Muslims. Now, of course, that's crazy. America's gone a better way, but the trouble is America is going back today on the great achievements of its first 200 years.
Now, some have argued for the so-called naked public square as the best way to deal with religious diversity, freedom and conflict, the idea that our public square should be secular and free of all religious expression rather than a multi-faith public square with sole freedom for all. Why do you see the multi-faith rather than naked public square as the best option?
Well, the naked public square, which was Richard John Neuhaus's wonderful term, has been advanced either by secularists or by separationists who may or may not be secularists. But you can see that if religion is excluded from public life, it's a simple fact that in our world today, the overwhelming majority of people are religious. So under the conditions of a naked public square, they don't simply have justice and freedom. Now, of course, there are different degrees of the naked public square. So something like the French laïcité is relatively mild, and something like China or North Korea is extremely harsh. But we've got to face the fact that in the 20th century, more than 100 million people were killed by secularist regimes with secularist leaders following a secularist ideology. And our friends who are secularists have to be a lot more humble in believing, in admitting that it's not just religion parts of the world that's a problem, but secularism's also been a problem. In fact, here in America, it's probably the dominant problem through separationism or extreme secularism driving religious voices out of public life. So it's unjust, unfree, and highly illiberal.
Let's get really practical for listeners here with this final question for you, Oz. You're not only aware of the challenges we face in working toward religious freedom and civility, but also the shortcomings found in certain approaches. You mentioned academic papers and conferences, interfaith dialogues, and civic activities. What kinds of activities can listeners get involved in that can make more impact in working toward religious freedom, diversity, and civility?
Well, there's a number of things that absolutely have to happen if we're to restore what Madison called the true remedy. And above all, we need to restore civic education. In other words, from the older generation to the younger generation, and from old-timers in America to new immigrants, there has to be a passing on of the torch, an understanding of how the American way operates. And that's what's disappeared today. And that's usually covered by civic education, although it should start in families, in other words, parents teaching their children what freedom of conscience, what civility, how to persuade people for differences, and so on. So civic education, now it's no secret that since the 1960s, civic education has virtually disappeared in the American public schools. And the original American motto was a pluribus unum. In other words, out of many, one. Now, if you take the unum, the uniting first principles of the American experiment, and of course they go much wider than freedom of conscience and religious freedom, although they're very key parts of it, many Americans today couldn't even say what they are. I'm often with groups, whether in churches or sometimes business leaders, groups, CEOs and others, and I ask them, take a piece of blank paper and write down 10 things that should be part of the American unum. In other words, uniting first principles that all Americans should believe, regardless of their religion or their ethnic background or their race or their country of origin or whatever. And today, very few people can put more than one or two. And you can see that civic education has let us down. In fact, it's been virtually banished from many of the public schools, although you do see it in the best of the private schools. But without it, America will be balkanized. So we need to have an articulation of what freedom of conscience means and all the implications that go with it, and then a systematic way of teaching it. Because as the great Alexis de Tocqueville pointed out, freedom is guaranteed not just by the law, but by what he called the habits of the heart. In other words, things taught by parents, taught by teachers, and so handed down from generation to generation. And if that disappears, America quite simply will go down the drain.
Wonderful suggestions there. The book, again, is The Global Public Square, Religious Freedom and the Making of a World Safe for Diversity. Our guest has been Os Guinness, and I appreciate and value and treasure your work in civility and religious freedom, and thank you so much for your time today.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me, John.